They said I'd never feel powerless again, that I'd learn how to control my life, my emotions, other people. And for a while, I believed them. I believed her. Her voice, her eyes, calm like still water hiding something sharp beneath. They called it sisterhood, but the truth was darker. There were collars. There were brands. There were secrets we whispered and secrets we screamed. And now I'm the one telling mine. If you're listening, it means I survived. But you need to understand something first. You don't escape a cult like this. You just trade one kind of prison for another. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation audiobook. If you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss a story. Today, we're honored to bring you The Self-Help Group That Destroyed Lives. Get ready to immerse yourself in a powerful, mind-blowing manipulation thriller that will leave you on the edge of your seat. Because here, our mission is to keep you coming back for more. So without further ado, let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. My first dose of empowerment was laced with poison. Told from a female perspective, I remember the moment I first walked through the glass doors like it was tattooed onto the inside of my skull. The air inside the lobby was warm. Unnaturally so, like it was hugging me before I even made it to the front desk. Polished floors, soft white lighting, a smell I couldn't place at first but would come to associate with surrender. Lavender and control. That's what they called it, control. Not dominance, not obedience. Control. Over yourself. Over your emotions. Over others. The receptionist, her name was Ava, smiled like she knew every version of me that had ever existed. That smile. It felt like forgiveness. It felt like a reset button. And God, I needed one. Welcome to Echelon, she said, her voice smooth like warm milk. You're right on time. They always are. That should have been my first clue. I wasn't just on time. I was expected. Watched. Measured. Perfectly placed in a sequence I didn't understand yet. I had just gotten out of something messy, a relationship that left bruises where no one could see. I wanted to be powerful again, or maybe for the first time. The ad said the program was designed for high-potential women with untapped dominance. I didn't see the irony then. The predator always knows how to dress up the cage as opportunity. The orientation room was minimalist. White walls. No windows. Chairs in a perfect circle, all filled with women who looked hollow in the same place as I was. All of us smiling like we had something to prove. That's the thing about people who join cults. No one thinks they're weak. They think they're strong enough to change. Then she walked in. Evelyn Vale. Her presence hit like a drug to the vein, slow, warm, dizzying. She wasn't conventionally beautiful. No, she was beyond that. She transcended beauty. She wore no makeup, only a white silk blouse and black slacks, like she had nothing to prove. Yet everyone in that room sat straighter, breathed quieter, when she entered. Including me. Power is not given, she said. It's remembered. And if you're here, it's because you forgot yours. We hung on every word like disciples. I didn't realize then that her entire technique was built on inversion, making you think the pain was yours, the recovery was hers to give. Over the next few weeks, they stripped us. Not physically at first, but emotionally. Our morning sessions were filled with mantras, breathwork, ice baths, discipline journaling. We called each other Sisters of Ascendance. It sounds laughable now, like something from a dystopian movie, but in those sterile white rooms, it made sense. Evelyn's voice made it all make sense. She used silence like a blade. If you spoke too much, she'd simply stare until you cracked under your own volume. If you cried, she'd hand you a mirror and say, "Look at what your weakness does to the women around you." We began skipping meals. It wasn't required. Nothing ever was, not officially. But the thinner you were, the closer you were to true refinement. That's how they said it. Like we were sculptures. Like the fat on our bodies was hiding the divinity beneath. Eventually, Evelyn selected 5 of us. The core. We were told we were ready for the next level. I felt chosen. I felt terrified. I didn't know that meant I'd be handed over to him. They called him the architect. He never appeared in public sessions. Only in the inner sanctum, suite 7A. You didn't speak unless spoken to. You didn't question instructions. You referred to him as Sir. And you gave over collateral, a naked photo, a dark secret, a written confession you'd never want the world to read. I gave them all 3, because by then I wasn't thinking clearly. I thought it was trust. He branded us. A searing pain between my hips and ribs. No anesthesia. No mirror to look into afterward. Just Evelyn's hand gripping mine, whispering, "You're becoming." "Becoming what?" less human, more hollow. I remember waking up that night, stomach cramping from hunger and shame. The lights were always kept dim in the sleeping quarters, like dreams weren't supposed to exist there. But I had one anyway, vivid, horrifying. I dreamed I was standing at the top of a glass building, naked and shaking, while Evelyn stood below me, arms raised, shouting, "Fly or fall, sister. Just don't stay still." When I woke up, I had wet the bed. I hadn't done that since I was 6. But there I was, 28 years old, physically raw and emotionally broken. And I still told myself this was transformation. That it had to hurt to be real. I was already too deep. Because that's the trick, right? You don't realize you're being manipulated until the chains start to feel like jewelry. Chapter 2. Collateral Damage. There was no ceremony when the first secret was used against me. No drumroll. No dramatic unveiling. It was just a text. A single sentence at 2:37 a.m. lit up on my screen like a quiet bomb. Your father would be disgusted if he knew about the abortion. No name. No context. But I knew exactly who sent it. I didn't need a signature. Evelyn had told us, true power needs no introduction. I sat up in bed, throat dry, heart sprinting. I didn't cry. I didn't scream. I just stared at that sentence like it was a knife I'd accidentally handed someone. And that's exactly what it was. One of the collaterals I had submitted to gain access to the inner teachings, the kind you can't take back. Evelyn had asked for it during a trust excavation session. That's what she called our confession circles. We sat in candlelight, one by one, encouraged to reveal the darkest moments of our lives. Not as a purge, she said, but as currency. Vulnerability is the down payment for ascension. I told them everything. The clinic. The loneliness. The way I stared at the ceiling while the vacuum sucked my insides clean and wondered if I would ever feel like a whole person again. Evelyn held my hand afterward and whispered, "You are brave. Your trauma is a testament to your readiness." She never mentioned it again. Not until the night it came back as blackmail. You'd think that would be the moment I left. That I'd scream, pack my bags, run. But it wasn't. I rationalized it. I told myself it was a test. That I was being shown my shadow self, and real transformation only happened through fire. And God, was I burning. The next morning, Evelyn greeted me with tea and a kiss on the forehead. "You've been seen," she said. "And still you are loved. That's how they do it. One hand presses the blade. The other offers the bandage." Week by week, things changed. Subtly at first. Phones were no longer allowed during group meetings. We told ourselves it was to eliminate distractions. We stopped wearing jewelry, then makeup, then color. The explanation? Uniformity fosters unity. Our meals became ritualistic. A single boiled egg in the morning, a cup of bone broth at night. We chanted before we ate. We were told hunger was sacred. It kept us alert, clean. I remember staring at the other girls' faces across the table. Hollow cheeks. Eyes that no longer reflected light. We looked like ghosts trying to remember what it felt like to be solid. And then came the commands. They weren't called that, not officially. Evelyn presented them as challenges. Little tasks to prove our discipline. At first it was minor. Stand in the rain for 10 minutes. Don't blink during meditation. Hold a plank until your muscles scream. But then it escalated. We were told to text ready at any time of day or night, and wait. Sometimes it would be hours. Then a command would come. Send a photo of your thighs. Stand outside naked for 60 seconds. Call yourself a failure. Record it. It felt like dying in fragments. Like every little piece of who I was before. The me who laughed too loud, who loved jazz, who had crooked teeth and didn't care, was being sliced away until only obedience was left. But it was the silence from the outside world that made it worse. My mom stopped texting. My friends gave up after I ghosted them for the third time. I told them I was doing deep work and needed to unplug. Evelyn taught us that boundaries were for the weak. A woman who shields herself from judgment is not brave. She is blind. I believed her. I stopped talking to my sister. I didn't even call her when she had a miscarriage. I told myself that this pursuit of higher self, was more important. And then Sir started calling. At first, it was short, 10-minute phone calls. His voice was clinical, low, like someone who didn't need to yell to dominate. He didn't ask questions. He made statements. "Your tone was insecure today. You hesitated when Evelyn asked you to speak. That's cowardice. You haven't earned your collar yet." Yes, the collar. That's what came next. Black leather, with a small gold key hanging from the ring. The first time I saw another woman wear it, I thought she looked beautiful. Sacred. claimed. I wanted that. I didn't understand yet that it wasn't a symbol of worth. It was a leash. One night, Evelyn handed me a small box. Inside was the collar, nestled in white silk. You're ready, she said. I put it on myself. No one forced me. That's how deep the manipulation went. I collared myself. I chose servitude because I thought it was enlightenment. That same night, I was summoned to Suite 7A again. This time the door was unlocked. He was waiting for me. Sir, he stood in front of a wall of lit candles, wearing a robe like some kind of oracle. I kept my eyes low as instructed. My heart felt like it had sprouted claws, scratching its way out of my chest. Strip, he said. I did. Kneel. I obeyed. Tell me who you belong to. My mouth opened before my brain could catch up. You, sir. In that moment, I thought I had passed the final test. That I was finally elevated. But really, I was just beginning to break. Chapter 3. The Obedience Protocol. You don't notice when obedience becomes instinct. That's the trick. It slips beneath the surface, slides into the nervous system until it's not a choice anymore. It's a reflex. You stop thinking and start responding, like a dog that hears the leash jingle and sits without command. That's who I was becoming, or had already become. After I received the collar, things accelerated. We were no longer sisters of ascendance. We were called vessels now. Vessels for what? For his teachings, his desires, his authority. We weren't told outright. That would make it too obvious. And nothing in Evelyn's world was ever obvious. It was always a riddle dressed as a revelation. The obedience protocol was introduced 2 weeks after I was collared. It began as a daily checklist. Wake at 4:44 a.m. Cold shower for 3 minutes. Recite the pledge aloud. 10 minutes of stillness facing a white wall. No sugar, no carbs, no eye contact unless permitted. Daily photo of your body sent to your assigned overseer. Overseer. The word alone made me shrink inside. I hated it, but I said nothing. Mine was Camilla, a former ballet dancer turned high-ranking vessel. She smiled with her teeth, but never with her eyes. Her ribs jutted out like blades, and she moved like everything she did was a performance. Perfect, intentional, hollow. She kept a spreadsheet of every infraction. Miss a check-in? That was an infraction. Speak without being addressed? Infraction. Show emotion in public? Major infraction. 3 infractions and you were put into reset. That meant silence. Total silence. No speaking, no acknowledgement, no name. Just you and the nothingness for 48 hours. One girl broke during reset. She sobbed through the night, whispering to herself. Camilla stood outside her room and played a metronome through the speaker. Tick, 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 tick. The sound of obedience. We began policing each other, too. Evelyn called it sister surveillance. When you love someone, you hold them to the standard, she said. Anything else is betrayal. So we snitched. Quietly. Lovingly. Like good disciples. I reported another vessel for laughing during dinner. She never looked at me the same after that. And yet, even with the hunger, the sleep deprivation, the psychological drills, I told myself I was stronger now. Better. I had never felt so in control and so controlled all at once. That contradiction, it felt like transcendence. Sir became more involved after that. He no longer waited for me to enter Suite 7A. He came to the common rooms now, touched shoulders, issued orders face to face. Sometimes he'd ask us to kneel mid-conversation. It didn't matter where we were, kitchen, hallway, bathroom. If he said the word ground, we dropped, like puppets with cut strings. I remember once a new girl, Melinda, hesitated. He said ground. She blinked, didn't move. The room went silent. Evelyn walked up to her slowly, wrapped a hand around her jaw, and said, "If you flinch when the gods speak, they won't speak again." Melinda cried that night. I heard her through the vents. She was gone the next morning. Not a goodbye. Not a trace. Just gone. We were told she had chosen to discontinue the journey. But that's not what Evelyn said to me privately. "Some women are too full of themselves to be emptied," she whispered, brushing the back of her fingers against my cheek. "But you are perfectly hollow." And I thanked her for it. Then came the assignment. Camilla handed me a sealed envelope during morning silence. On the outside was a single word, gift. Inside, a burner phone. A new name, Eliza Monroe. A key to an apartment across town. Instructions to sever all remaining outside ties. "Your old self must die," the note read. "Eliza will serve in her place." I didn't hesitate. I packed a single bag and moved that night. The apartment was bare, mattress on the floor, blackout curtains, a steel desk with no drawers. The walls were white, the light bulbs dim. On the desk sat a leather-bound journal labeled, Training Manual Level 2. Each page was handwritten. Evelyn's handwriting. Neat, slanted, elegant. She had written it for me. Or at least that's what she made me believe. The first page. Eliza, you are not here to understand. You are here to become. Every day I followed instructions. Woke at 3:33 now. Did drills in front of the mirror, reciting phrases like, I am not desire, I am duty. I was not allowed to leave the apartment unless summoned. My meals were delivered. My phone buzzed with orders. Sometimes it was Sir. Sometimes Camilla. But never Evelyn. Evelyn had become distant. Godlike. Present through her words, but unreachable. One night I got a text. Be at 48 Mercer Street. Back entrance. Midnight. Wear red. No questions. I obeyed. It was a townhouse. Luxurious. Dimly lit. Inside I saw them, other vessels. Kneeling. All of us in red. A ceremonial robe was handed to me. It smelled like ash and perfume. Sir walked in. But he wasn't alone. There were men. I counted six. All older. All well-dressed. All seated like kings in front of us. Sir spoke first. The world has chewed these men up and spat them out. You, my vessels, are their resurrection. What followed wasn't just obedience. It was sacrifice. And afterward, when I was numb and shaking, Evelyn appeared. She hadn't spoken to me in weeks. But now she knelt in front of me, cupped my face, and said, This is your rebirth. And I am so proud of how far you've fallen. And in that moment, I wept. Because I didn't know who I was anymore. Because I was sure, deep down, that this was love. And that was the most dangerous lie of all. Chapter 4. Brand loyalty. The first time I smelled flesh burning, I thought I was dying. The second time, I realized that was the point. They told us branding was sacred. That it wasn't punishment, it was commitment. Evelyn said it was a permanent vow etched in truth. Sir called it the gateway to the highest level of obedience. Camilla just smiled, serene and unbothered, as she rolled out the small stainless steel tray like she was preparing for a facial, not a ritual of pain. The tray held a single iron instrument. Custom-made, they said. A thin, curved shape, vaguely resembling a triangle with curling edges. We weren't told what the symbol meant, just that it would mark us as chosen. They did it in Evelyn's meditation studio. White walls, no windows, the smell of sandalwood and sterilizing alcohol battling for dominance. For vessels were called that night. I was one of them. The others went before me, biting down on leather straps, shaking silently afterward. One girl passed out. Another vomited. No one screamed. That was the rule. When it was my turn, I laid down on the floor without instruction. They didn't bind me. They didn't need to. Camilla knelt beside me, held my wrist, and whispered. Pain is proof you were here. You matter now. Then came the seer. A hiss. A smell like burning hair and blood. A scream that never made it past my throat. It lasted seconds. But I felt it for days. The next morning, Evelyn gifted me a silk scarf and a single white rose. Now you belong to something eternal, she said. Now you're more than just skin. I wore the scarf every day, hiding the brand just beneath my ribs. Not because I was ashamed. No, because I wanted to protect it, like a secret only I deserved to know. That's what they did to us. They made pain feel like privilege. Isolation deepened after that. Not just physical, emotional. The outside world became irrelevant. We were told our families wouldn't understand. That reaching out would disrupt the frequency of transformation. I believed it. So when my sister left another voicemail begging me to come home, I deleted it. When my old college roommate texted me, Are you okay? You're scaring me, I blocked her. Sir said ties to the outside were like anchors dragging our spirit down. So I cut every rope. Inside the group, we weren't allowed to speak freely anymore. We could only ask questions using a script. It started with your permission, may I inquire about, and ended with, as it pertains to my evolution. Even our curiosity was controlled. We became shadows of women. Perfect posture, silent footsteps, eyes forward. We no longer referred to ourselves by name, only by designation. I was Vessel 34. They taught us voice reduction therapy. That's what they called it. Evelyn said a woman's voice had been weaponized by ego for centuries, and now it was time to unlearn the addiction to being heard. We spent hours in silence, then hours speaking only in whispers. Camilla once punished a girl for humming under her breath while folding towels. She was given the room. A soundproof box with no light, no clock, no voice. 2 days. When she came out, she never spoke again unless directly told to. The branding wasn't just physical. It became a psychological framework. Each morning, we recited the 3 laws of marking. Pain cleanses confusion. Silence sustains power. The brand is not burned, it is earned. And I believed all of it. It wasn't fear anymore. It was worship. I loved Evelyn. I feared Sir. I trusted Camilla. Until the night I was told to recruit. Sir called it the expansion phase. He said I had proven myself loyal. That true devotion meant growing the garden. I was to select a woman I knew, a friend, a colleague, a sister, and bring her in. She doesn't need to know everything, he said. Not at first. Just get her through the door. I thought of my cousin, Natalia. Bright. Lonely. Recently divorced. The kind of woman searching for meaning. I stared at her contact name on my phone for hours. I didn't sleep. The next day I lied. I told them I had no one. No friends left. No connections. Sir narrowed his eyes. Lying is a sin of the weak, he said. And weakness is contagious. That night, I was summoned to Suite 7A. Alone. The room was darker than usual. No candles. Just a single spotlight above the chair. He didn't speak for a full 5 minutes. Just circled me. I sat still, breathing shallow. Finally, he leaned close and whispered, "If you cannot serve the mission, then you become the lesson." The next day, they took my scarf. Camilla stripped it from my neck and replaced it with a black one, a mark of internal dissonance. "Until you are aligned again," she said. I felt cold without it, like a limb had been severed. The other vessels avoided me. No eye contact. No touch. I had become invisible in a place that once made me feel chosen. Evelyn didn't speak to me for 3 weeks. When she finally did, it was to deliver a choice. "Bring us someone," she said, "or be reset." Not the silence. Not the cold box. Not even the room. The ultimate reset. Total detachment. Stripped of name, purpose, identity. You become a ghost within the group. No one speaks to you. You eat alone. Sleep alone. Walk the halls without acknowledgement. "We erase you," she said, "so that you may decide if you're worthy of reappearing." I looked at her and realized something I hadn't before. Evelyn wasn't just the gatekeeper. She was the punisher. And for the first time in months, something inside me cracked. Not from fear. From rage. Because the brand didn't just hurt my skin, it rewrote my mind. And I was beginning to remember who I was before the burn. Chapter 5. The Break Program. It started as a whisper. Not in the room, not from another vessel, but inside me. A sliver of a voice I hadn't heard in months. "Mine. This is not growth. This is not empowerment. This is a fucking prison." That was the first time I used that word. Prison. Even thinking it felt dangerous. Like saying it out loud would trigger some hidden alarm, and Sir would appear behind me with that awful, surgically calm voice. But the thought didn't go away. If anything, it grew louder. I was still wearing the black scarf. The symbol of internal misalignment. Days blurred into each other. No one spoke to me unless it was to correct my posture or order me to repeat the pledge. The pledge. I am not the storm. I am the stillness after. I do not seek to be known. I only seek to be worthy. Bullshit. I mouthed the words, but inside I was screaming. The day the break program began, Camilla pulled me aside. Her smile was tighter than usual. There was something new in her eyes, fear maybe. Or pity. I couldn't tell. "The break program," she said, "is not punishment. It's purification. That's how they always frame torture. With poetry." She led me to the lowest floor of the compound. I didn't even know it existed until then. The walls were darker. The lights flickered. It felt like descending into someone's psychosis. Inside the room, there was only a steel chair bolted to the floor. A thin mat. A basin. A single camera in the corner, blinking red. "You'll be here for as long as it takes," Camilla said. "Until what?" I asked. "Until you come back to yourself." But I wasn't lost. I was waking up. The first 24 hours were light deprivation. No overheads, no candles. Just blackness and white noise pumped through the ceiling. Not loud, just constant. Like a broken radio tuned to a dead station. Enough to fray the edges of thought. There was no clock. No schedule. Food was delivered irregularly. Sometimes after what felt like hours, other times after what felt like entire days. I never knew when to expect it, and that was the point. Disorientation breeds dependence. I counted seconds. I tried to track time by how many times my heartbeat echoed through my ribs. That didn't work. I lost track. Then I lost count. Then I stopped trying. The worst part, the voice recordings. They played Evelyn's voice on loop through a speaker in the wall. Phrases like, surrender is strength. Pain is the doorway to self. Let go of your identity. You are vessel. You are void. Her voice, once so comforting, became a blade. I began hearing it even when the speaker was off. I started talking to myself to stay sane, whispering my real name over and over like a prayer I didn't want to forget. I'm not Vessel 34. I'm Lila. My name is Lila. You can't take that from me. At some point, I don't know when, the hallucinations began. I saw Evelyn standing in the corner, even when I knew she wasn't there. I heard Sir's voice in the water basin. I felt hands touching my back while I slept. I cracked, but I didn't break. There's a difference. On what I think was the fifth day, the lights came on. Camilla stood in the doorway, holding a fresh white scarf. Have you returned to us? She asked. And that's when I lied. Yes, I whispered. I'm ready to be hollow again. She smiled. She believed me. But the voice in my head didn't go silent. It got sharper, louder, angrier, because something had changed inside me. I wasn't just doubting anymore. I was plotting. When I returned to the common quarters, everything looked different. Not physically, mentally. I saw the fear in the other Vessel's eyes now. I saw the way they flinched when Sir entered. I saw how Evelyn's encouragement sounded more like control with every word she spoke. We were all breaking quietly together. I started testing limits. Small things. I'd hold eye contact a second too long. I'd wait an extra beat before responding to a command. I even hummed under my breath once, just to see if anyone noticed. Camilla did. She pulled me aside. Her voice trembled, just barely. You're walking a line, Lila, she warned. She called me Lila. Not Vessel 34. Something cracked in her, too. Then came the assignment that changed everything. Evelyn summoned me. Alone. Her private chamber. The room was warmer than I remembered. Softer. Draped in white, scented with jasmine and ash. She sat cross-legged, barefoot, looking human. For once. I know what happened to you during break, she said. I'm fine, I lied. No, she replied. You're fractured. But that's not failure. It's the next step. Shattered pieces reflect the light. I almost believed her, until she slid the file across the floor. Inside, a photo. A name. A bio. Natalia. My cousin. Your assignment, Evelyn said. I told you I have no one, I replied. We always know the truth before you do. I stared at the file for what felt like an eternity. Recruiting her would complete my loyalty arc. I would be raised to trainer status. A higher rank. Fewer rules. More power. More access. But it would mean dragging someone I loved into this abyss. What if I refuse? I asked. Evelyn leaned forward. Then we'll bring her in anyway. But we'll tell her you asked us to. That was the moment I understood the depth of their control. It wasn't about what they did to you. It was about what they made you do to others. That night, I didn't sleep. I stared at my branded skin. At the white scarf. At my reflection. I wasn't hollow. I wasn't obedient. I wasn't a vessel. Not anymore. I was a spy. And I was going to burn it all down from the inside. Chapter 6. The Uprising in Silence. Revolution doesn't start with a scream. It starts with a look. A sideways glance held too long. A twitch at the corner of someone's mouth when Evelyn speaks. A single second of delayed obedience. That's how I knew who to trust. That's how I began to gather the fragments of rebellion inside a place built on silence. The first was Noor. She was quiet even before the silence rules, too quiet. Her eyes were always moving, but her body never followed. A dancer with no floor. One morning, as we folded linens in perfect synchronization, I whispered, "Do you remember your real name?" She didn't react. Not at first. But a few minutes later, as she passed me a fresh set of towels, she whispered back, "I never forgot it. That's how it began. The uprising was never loud. We met during mandatory chores, while scrubbing floors, while washing glass, while serving food in Evelyn's private quarters. We passed notes folded into tea packets. We etched words onto soap bars with fingernails and let the water dissolve them after they were read. You're not alone. I remember what hunger felt like before it was holy. This isn't healing. It's erasure. We weren't planning escape. Not yet. We were planning awakening. Because the first act of defiance isn't running. It's remembering. I started wearing my collar looser, leaving the scarf tied with a knot that unraveled just slightly each day. Nor noticed. Then Camilla. One evening, Camilla cornered me in the hallway. She was shaking. Not angry, afraid. You're drawing attention, she hissed. They'll notice. Sir's already asking questions. Let him ask, I said. Maybe someone should finally answer. She didn't report me. Not yet. There was a part of her, buried beneath years of doctrine, that still remembered freedom. I saw it flicker in her when she touched the brand on her stomach absent-mindedly, as if she wanted to scratch it off, but didn't have the courage. I knew then, she wasn't lost. She was trapped, just like I had been. We created a signal, 3 slow blinks. That was the code for I'm still in. It started to spread. First Nor, then Iris, then Bryn. All of us branded, all of us broken in different places. All of us still blinking. We weren't warriors yet. We were survivors. And that was enough for now. But we needed more than whispers. We needed proof. I found it in Sir's private room. It was the first time I was invited back since the branding. He said I had earned the honor of intimacy. I said nothing, just bowed my head and followed. While he undressed me with clinical precision, I memorized the room. The hidden cameras. The locked drawer. The wall safe behind the painting. He left me alone afterward, like he always did. As if his presence was too divine to linger. That's when I moved. No hesitation. No second thoughts. I found a tablet inside his drawer. Unlocked. Arrogant. Hundreds of files. Photos. Audio clips. Videos. Blackmail. Proof. Vessel confessions. Naked images. Recordings of breakdowns. Evelyn's voice orchestrating it all. I sent 3 to Nor using the burner phone I had buried under the floor of my bunk. She was waiting. She knew what to do. She uploaded them. Encrypted. Anonymous. To a blog called Echoes of Obedience. The next morning, whispers spread like rot. Sir stormed into the meditation room. Someone has betrayed our sacred trust, he bellowed. This isn't just disobedience. This is war. He began searching bunks, pulling vessels from their rooms. Evelyn's calm cracked for the first time. Her eyes were wide. Not furious. Not divine. Human. Terrified. Because she knew this wasn't just a leak. It was the beginning of the end. Nor was taken the next day. Dragged out of the common room mid-morning by 2 men in black. Not Camilla. Not Sir. Outsiders. Security. Real-world muscle. That's how serious it had become. They didn't let her speak. But as they pulled her away, she blinked. 3 times. Slow. Deliberate. I blinked back, and for the first time in months, I felt something deeper than fear. I felt purpose. That night, I found Camilla crying in the shower stall. She hadn't cried since she lost her voice in Reset. But now, her hands were trembling. Her collar undone. Her black scarf stuffed into her mouth like she couldn't stand the sight of it anymore. They're going to kill her, she whispered. I knelt beside her. Then help me stop them. Camilla didn't speak. But she reached for my hand. And squeezed. Our plan accelerated. The files were scheduled to drop, publicly. Everything. Full archive. Sir's face. Evelyn's voice. The branding videos. The breakdown footage. The indoctrination sessions. Camilla provided the last key, Sir's master schedule. A list of guests. Donors. Hidden supporters. Names we didn't recognize. Names we did. CEOs. Politicians. Spiritual influencers. The world needed to see them for who they really were. Evelyn gathered us the next morning. All vessels. Full assembly. First time in months. She stood barefoot, wearing red. Her voice calm. Her posture perfect. This is not a cult, she said. This is a revolution of the spirit. And revolutions always demand blood. She was preparing for a purge. We didn't have time to wait. The files were scheduled to go live in 36 hours. All we had to do was survive. Chapter 7. The Fall of the House of Vale. The last day felt like an echo before a scream. Evelyn's voice still haunted the compound speakers. Recordings looping from hidden corners, mantras sharpened into weapons. Doubt is the disease of the unfinished. Disobedience is the rot beneath the bloom. But the recordings felt different now. Hollow. Her words bounced off the walls and died before they could take root. Because something in us had already cracked wide open. The leak had worked. The Echoes of Obedience blog was live. The files were out. My voice, my real voice, was in the world again. I had recorded a message and left it embedded in the archive. My name is Lila Monroe. Not Vessel 34. Not Eliza. Not Void. I was branded. Starved. Obedient. But I remember who I am now. And I remember what they did to us. If you're hearing this, help us. We were no longer whispers. We were heard. Camilla stayed close to me that day. She hadn't spoken much since Nor was taken. But the look in her eyes was no longer fear, it was resolve. We had a window. a 3-hour gap before Sir's afternoon strategy circle. When most staff would be occupied, the plan was simple: expose Evelyn in real time. We'd already preloaded the speakers with the audio files. Evelyn's voice coercing confessions, instructing women to be branded, blackmailing with secrets. Camilla had access to the control panel. All she needed was my signal. But something went wrong. Nor returned. She stumbled into the common room mid-morning. Limping. Bloody. But alive. Her eyes were swollen. Her lips split. Her voice raspy. "They didn't know I had a backup file," she whispered. "It went live. We held her. Held her like a sister we thought we lost. And then the sirens went off. Not outside. Inside. Security breach. Retaliation. Sir was coming. We had to move fast." Camilla and I sprinted to the AV room, a small chamber hidden behind the meditation wing. Inside, a switchboard, speaker links, server wires snaking across the wall like veins. Camilla's hands moved with shaking precision. She looked at me. "You still sure?" I was never more than this sure. She smiled, just a flicker, and flipped the switch. Evelyn's voice filled the compound. But not the soothing version. Not the curated sermons. These were the raw tapes. She said the abortion was her greatest shame. "Good, that means she'll stay. Tell her she's chosen, then starve her. Pain makes them obedient. They confuse it with growth." The sound echoed through every corridor. The dorms. The dining halls. The sanctum. The ritual rooms. All of it. And then, Sir's voice. "Get the collars tighter. Make them bleed. A bleeding woman is a believing woman." The building stilled. Vessels froze in place. Some dropped to the floor, sobbing. Some stared blankly at the speakers, mouths open in horror. Others, those who'd been doubting in silence, stood. Looked around. Realized we were all waking up. At once. Then came Evelyn. She stormed into the common room like a god whose temple had been defiled. Her white dress fluttered around her like smoke. Her face, stone. "Behind her, sir." Cold. Calculating. Still somehow calm. I stepped forward. Barefoot. No scarf. No collar. Branded and bleeding, but standing. "It's over," I said. Evelyn laughed. "You think the world will care? That they'll believe you?" I stepped aside. Nor stood behind me. Then Bryn. Then Iris. Then Camilla. One by one, vessels rose from the floor. From behind corners. From beneath beds. All of us blinking. 3 times. Sir reached into his jacket, maybe for a phone. Maybe worse. But Camilla was faster. She held up her phone and hit send. Live stream. The entire confrontation broadcast. The branding scars. The names. The tears. Evelyn's voice. Sir's face. Sir ran. He didn't make it past the back door. Local police, tipped off anonymously days earlier, had been waiting. They tackled him to the ground. The last thing I saw of him was his face in the mud. Expressionless. Unremarkable. Not a leader. Just a man who thought no one would ever say no. Evelyn didn't run. She just sat. Folded her hands in her lap. Looked at me. "You loved me," she said softly. And she wasn't wrong. But I loved the lie she sold me. Not the woman behind it. "I loved who you pretended to be," I said. And then I walked away. The aftermath was a blur of reporters, depositions, therapy sessions that didn't feel like therapy. Just retelling. Again and again. Trying to convince the world that brainwashing isn't a weakness. It's a method. Evelyn was convicted. Sir too. Camilla turned state's witness. Nor moved to Arizona. She adopted a dog. Named him Whisper. I stayed. In the same town. Same coffee shop. Same bookstore I used to pass every day, but never entered. Until now. The barista asked for my name. And I said it. Loud. Clear. Lila Monroe. Because that's who I am. Not a vessel. Not a brand. Not a fucking void. Just Lila. And I am not broken. I am awake.